This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you bright and early on this Saturday morning ahead of the Jets-Bruins game. Puck drop for that game, 12 noon Central Time here on this fine station and on your televisions on TSN Jets. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Joining us on the program this morning in about 90 minutes time, live from Malmo, Sweden, the site of the World Junior Hockey Championships, where the semifinals will get underway this morning, Kevin McGran from the Toronto Star is going to join us. And then in about 2 hours time, Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network, is going to join us to preview this afternoon's Jets-Bruins game. We got a lot of hockey talk for you. Obviously, Team Canada, the announcement of that team gets underway on Tuesday. You can hear that announcement 10 a.m. local time on this fine station. We're going to give you our teams today. We're going to break down what we think Team Canada is going to look like. But gentlemen, let's get started with the one team that has been unveiled. It was unveiled at the NHL's Winter Classic in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Team USA unveiled earlier this week. Richard, Ezra, good morning to both of you. And what, in your minds, is the biggest surprise associated with the Team USA? Is it the omission of Bobby Ryan?
Morning, guys. How could it not be? With what's been going on in the media lately, I think the omission of Bobby Ryan is a big one, Drew. I think if you look at his body of work, not only this year, Richie, but over the course of his career, he probably deserved to be on that team, and they had their reasons for not including him on the team. But I guess it's the way that it came out that was really shocking, and now we're starting to see that David Poile and Brian Burke and USA Hockey, I guess, thought that they had editorial rights over the decision to release that information, which apparently they were aware that they didn't have. But there were some other omissions as well. Keith Yandel, I think you could make a strong argument for Dustin Byfuglien. I think we all know Dustin Byfuglien's weaknesses. But yeah, I think Bobby Ryan not being on that team, Richie, is a big omission. I think that is the big story. I think there's some good players on that U.S. team. But I think when you look at Bobby Ryan and how many goals he scored over the last several years, I think that is a big omission.
Yeah, Drew, it's the biggest omission because of how much production he's had. As you mentioned, 30 goals for, I believe, five seasons now, and he's the third leading goal scorer this year for the Americans. That is probably the biggest one. And the Yandel one, I mean, I saw some argument over Yandel and Byfuglien were left off the team because they just cannot defend well enough.
Similar reason to why Mike Green would have been left off the team 4 years ago in Vancouver.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, exactly. Based on his offensive production, the way he can quarterback a power play now, you can't really as much anymore, as well at least. But the idea is, you know, there's some liability issues. Now, Ryan is different in that he's not really a liability. You know, he plays on a side where, you know, they have Kessel and they have Kane and they have some other guys that they could put in front of him. But is that really the biggest, you know, impediment? I mean, is he, how many GMs would take Ryan over Wheeler or Wheeler over Ryan? I mean, that's an interesting question. I would have thought before this that Ryan would have been picked before Wheeler. Maybe not. Maybe it's just the team. Maybe it's the role. In any event, I think Bobby Ryan's omission is the most surprising, and I think would have garnered the most attention in any event, but has more so because of this controversy.
So you look at Team USA, and they obviously made their announcement, and that was the one that obviously has been the focus of the attention.
Yeah.
Let's look at the team in sort of the whole team, top to bottom. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that we would say their greatest attribute, their greatest strength right now is in goal. You know, Ryan Miller and Jonathan Quick, you know, a very solid 1-2. All right, let's get to number three, Jimmy Howard, who I would be surprised if he sees any game action in this tournament. Do you expect that? Are you surprised that they took Jimmy Howard as the number three over some of their other guys? Schneider, Ben Bishop, obviously having a great year there in Tampa Bay.
I mean, Bishop wasn't great, as they mentioned in the Burnside and the Kevin Allen articles. Wasn't great in the World Championships last year. He's been good this year, but he's not going to play. Howard has played in the playoffs, so if you need to go to the third goalie, you want to have a guy with experience. I think Schneider is the better goalie. I would have taken Schneider, but I think they want to take Howard because Schneider really hasn't been getting a ton of action. Still, I guess somewhat unpredictable based on his lack of play over the past few years, which has been much talked about. And I think if Kenny Holland had a choice of having Corey Schneider or Jimmy Howard in between the pipes, he would choose Corey Schneider, even though he gave big money to Howard. But I don't have an issue with that third goalie being Howard because I don't think he's a huge liability. And, you know, you can't, you know, the talk about giving that third net mining spot as a token, you can't do that. One injury, you know, some bad performance and one injury, and you might be talking about that third goalie. If you remember in 2002, the Team Canada was considering Eddie Belfour, very close to picking Eddie Belfour to start a game. I believe Ken Hitchcock was in favor of it. You know, that was his goalie at the time, I believe, in Dallas. And or he had been fired just before. But the idea is, you know, you can possibly go to that guy. You likely won't, but you can possibly go to him. So you better believe that he can play for you. So don't just choose it as a token.
Richie, I think you're right. There's this misconception that the third goalie isn't one of the best three goalies. He's just, you know, somehow in this individual category. But I think you're right about Corey Schneider. I think because he split games with Marty Brodeur, that affected him. If you look at the numbers, if you compare Jimmy, and again, you don't always just want to look at numbers, right, guys? But if you look at Jimmy Howard's numbers versus Corey Schneider or Ben Bishop, he has worse numbers than both of those goalies. Corey Schneider has a better goals against and a better save percentage, but because he hasn't played as much, and Jimmy Howard has missed some time as well with an injury. But I think when you're looking at what basically led to the decision, and I remember when we do our three things we learned this week, I mentioned that Jimmy Howard was playing really well. It seemed like right after that he started to really have problems because this hasn't been his best year. Richie mentioned his performance in last year's playoffs. He was excellent in the playoffs last year. So Jimmy Howard deserves to be there. But you could, you know, you mentioned right off the show, Drew, what were the biggest omissions? Ben Bishop is arguably a Vezina candidate this year, and he's been unbelievable since coming over from Ottawa. He's definitely filled the number one starter role like Anders Lindback wasn't able to do last year. So Ben Bishop, to me, is a bigger omission even than Corey Schneider, even though Corey Schneider was obviously the favorite because of his body of work with the Canucks. But I think Bishop, too, you could make a strong argument that that was one of the bigger omissions. But, you know, back to the omissions in this whole process, Richie mentioned before we came on air, those Kevin Allen and Scott Burnside articles were absolutely unbelievable. I think as far as hockey journalism goes, I know you want to get into it after.
Yeah, next.
But I think those were, I wish someone came out with one of those every day of the week. But I think, as Richie mentioned, is this as big of a deal if Scott Burnside doesn't mention that Brian Burke quote? And I think really that's just put fuel on the fire. I think it's a big deal that he didn't make the team. But I think the fact that Brian Burke had those comments about, you know, Bobby Ryan's intensity and all that, I really think it has just made it worse.
Before we get into that next segment, I mean, I think to me that the issue is this team isn't that good.
Well, then let's talk about that.
And I don't think it's a bad team by any means. To me, the question, they're good in goal, as you mentioned, Drew, although Quick's been injured. Miller, you know, past few years hasn't been maybe as sharp. He's been solid at points, but he hasn't been sharp at points either, and I know the team is awful. The question marks for me, the back end, I want to talk about that in a second, and then the middle. I mean, these are the pillars of organizations. If you look at the best teams in the National Hockey League, where are they strong? Center and defense. And this team is not great at center. And is not great on defense. And I don't mean that David Backes isn't a good player. I love David Backes. He could play on my team. But David Backes is not a natural scorer. David Backes is a 60-point guy in a good year. And really, you know, he's not your 80 to 90-point guy. So you look up the middle and you say, okay, they bring David Backes. They bring Derek Stepan as their fifth guy. They want a fifth center. Which is funny because Canada has so many centers. U.S. doesn't have a lot of centers. Paul Stastny isn't what he was 5-6 years ago. And his foot speed is an issue. And he's the only left-handed center on the squad. Ryan Kessler I like, but again, not a natural scorer, guys.
Sure.
So when you're looking at Backes, Kessler, Stastny, Stepan, and then you have Pavelski, who can play center wing. He's not a great skater either. I mean, that center, I mean, those guys are not, aside from Backes, are not number one centers. You step on, well, it depends on Richards. But they're really not number one centers on any of their teams. I mean,
no, they're not striking fear into
They're not number one centers on their NHL hockey team.
Right. They're not striking fear into anybody.
Let's simplify it. And then you look at the defense. And again, collectively, this team can be good because they're big. And they are, you know, they have guys like Callahan, Backes, Kessler, committed to winning. And I like the way they play.
Are they better suited for a North American size rink?
You know, there could be a question of foot speed on some angles here. I think you could certainly go, you know, talk about the foot speed issue. Is it glaring? No, because guys like Oshie, Pacioretty, Wheeler can skate. But there is maybe some foot speed issues. You saw in the articles that you guys read, you know, Dale Towns say, hey, we're not the fastest team here. You look at the back end. You know, I think Fowler was rightfully picked. I think that he has earned it. I think he's been very good. Justin Falk, nice young and up-and-coming player. John Carlson, young and up-and-coming player too, although question his ability to defend. What surprised me is Paul Martin's guarantee on the squad. I mean, would Paul Martin have gotten more than a significant, more even a sniff from Team Canada?
No.
And that doesn't mean because he wouldn't get a sniff that this team can't beat Canada. I don't want people to misinterpret that. But Paul Martin, guys, I mean, not the best offense. As you watched some of the Devils for years, not the best offensive defenseman. And at times can be muscled off the puck. Doesn't play that physical of a game. You know, solid player, not a top two defender as far as I'm concerned, yet he seemed like a guarantee from the outset in this process, and I'm surprised by that.
Well, would you rather have Paul Martin or would you rather have Jack Johnson? And I mean, Ezzie, you can touch on all that.
Well, I can't disagree with Richie on that one. When you read Kevin Allen's piece or Scott Burnside's piece, it was tough to read all of them because they were so long, but I did read both of them. But Kevin Allen's piece, he mentioned it as well, I know that. Paul Martin, this year, he's only played, I think, 20 games, and he's injured right now. And, you know, Richie touched on his offensive numbers. Back in the days with the Devils, he'd score 30, 35 points. He might have a 40-point season, but his offensive numbers have been in decline. Right now on the Pittsburgh Penguins, he's a bottom-pairing defenseman. He doesn't factor in with the emergence of Ole Mattis. So I'd have to agree, when you look at the locks, that's not a name that, to me, Cam Fowler's a lock over Paul Martin. And when you talk about keeping off of Keith Yandle and Dustin Byfuglien, I don't think there's a radio show maybe in the world that has talked more about Dustin Byfuglien than this show.
Yep.
And I still think that when you consider his puck possession statistics and the fact, and I know I got people going on Twitter about this.
I love that people take you seriously on Twitter, for the record.
Well, no, I was being serious. I think he did warrant serious consideration. I think these guys were talking about Dustin Byfuglien.
I'm talking about when you said that he should be captain of the team or something.
Oh, yeah, that was a joke. But, I mean, when you're the fourth leading scorer in the NHL, and you can't deny that Byfuglien creates more offense than arguably any other player on the Jets, with maybe the exception
ways.
With both ways, but his defensive
like
deficiencies kill him.
Yeah.
So, okay, so think about it like this. If Paul Martin's possibly your extra defenseman, why not take...
I don't think he is, though. I think he's a top four guy, the way they were talking about him.
Well, that's a problem.
He's going to play the right side, likely.
That's a problem. And
right,
his numbers have been in decline. He's had injury issues. And I'm not going to start the conspiracy theory, but is Ray Shiro having too much of an opinion on the two Penguins that are forming the back end? Because I can't, if we're going on merit, and that's what we go on, because the world works on the merit system. If you earn your spot there, it has nothing to do with who you play for and all that. Even though when we talked to Al Strachan about the 98 Olympics, there obviously was some influence from Bobby Clark and Paul Holmgren.
I read the book on vacation. It really does get deep into that.
That right. Being 99.
So I think the general manager and who that general manager has on their team does have an impact. You could make an argument Brooks Orpik shouldn't be on this team, even though I think Brooks Orpik deserves to be on the team more than Paul Martin. But again,
both questionable for me.
Okay, we've talked about Keith Yandle. We've talked about Byfuglien. You mentioned Jack Johnson. What about Eric Johnson? Eric Johnson's a guy that hasn't gotten a lot of talk here, and he's been excellent for Colorado. He's really got their power play going in Colorado. Sure, he never became Richie he didn't live up to the first overall pick hype, but Eric Johnson certainly, I would say, deserves to be on this team more than Paul Martin. Now,
what about John Carlson? I mean, that's to me is what you look at. You look at a guy like Eric Johnson, a bigger guy than John Carlson in the sense of the way he plays. I mean, Carlson's 6'3", but the way he plays. And Carlson, from my perspective, has not developed defensively as I thought he would from 2-3 years ago. And Johnson has issues. You can talk about his hockey sense, maybe a little bit of a foot speed issue, and Carlson can skate better. But yeah, Ezzie, I think that point is merit as well. So I mean, there's a lot of these guys. I don't necessarily want to depend on late in the game. And I realize, to me, they're two best defensemen, and I love the way we talked about Cam Fowler on midweek. I love the way he's developed. But their two best defensemen are McDonough and Suter. That, to me, they're two best defensemen. I like those defensemen.
Yeah, the first pairing could be Suter, Shattenkirk.
Yeah, and I mean,
or it could be, yeah.
Yeah, it depends.
Those are two good defensemen.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's still going to be, this is still a good defense. This is one thing that was said numerous times in the article. We're talking about good players here.
Mm-hmm.
But
it seems to me like if you look at this Team USA, the one word that jumps out to me is it's very safe. You know, there's nobody here that's a wild card that can either put you over the top or necessarily be to the detriment.
Well, I think the biggest maybe surprise would be Justin Falk because of his age. And Richie mentioned Cam Fowler. I don't think, you know, when you read, and again, we recommend to everybody listening to read these articles. Maybe we can link them at some point in the show. But to me, Cam Fowler, to be kind of one of the last defensemen accepted, I think he might be, as Richie said, he might be second or third best defenseman on this team. He's really been a very successful player this year.
I think it's been a coming out party for him, I think.
And so, I mean, maybe Justin Falk, but yeah, you know, Drew, you say safe. When you've taken all of these guys, Paul Martin didn't play in the last Olympics, but he was on the team, and he was part of the, I believe he was even part of the 06 team, if I'm not mistaken. But a guy like that, you're taking over some of these other players that really, I think, have earned the spot there. Jack Johnson, again, that came from that article. Jack Johnson, they're calling him Captain America. He's one of the best defensemen on the Columbus Blue Jackets. He hasn't played very well this year. So you leave him off in favor of a guy like Paul Martin, who, what has he done? He hasn't even played half of the games this year for the Penguins.
Jack Johnson's omission is an interesting one in that it gets to the loyalty factor. I have a tough time with that one. Should he be over there with some of the other guys I think chosen? Yeah, probably. And I think the determining factor there for me would even just be his loyalty to the program.
In that he's been a good foot soldier for Team USA, going to all the world championships.
Having said that, I don't have Rick Nash on my team. We'll talk about it later. And he's been a good foot soldier for the Team Canada.
Okay, Richie, of all the defensemen he's mentioned, just put Paul Martin up against any one of those defensemen. All of those defensemen are better than Paul Martin at this point in his career.
I think so.
Nothing against
and
Paul Martin.
Paul Martin's been better this year, guys. But there was a time in this salary that the new contract that he signed in Pittsburgh, their rumblings of Pittsburgh couldn't give him away. And they were going to possibly give him away to make that run at Parise to play with Crosby, blah, blah. Didn't happen. But, I mean, he wasn't a house on fire by any means.
And you know a lot of people, Richie, talk about defensive defensemen versus offensive defensemen and how that doesn't really matter. I think it does matter. At the end of the day, guys, the Olympic ice, yeah, sure, it's about moving the puck. You can't be on this team if you're not a good skater. That's obviously what hurt Dustin Byfuglien. Yeah. Even though I think Dustin Byfuglien doesn't get a lot of credit for his skating, I think, sure, when he gets tired, we've talked about that a lot. But Paul Martin, when you put him up against Keith Yandel, Eric Johnson, Jack Johnson, I think he doesn't stand out against those guys. And so for me, that kind of affects the dynamic of the defense. You talked about the goaltending. The goaltending, I think the Americans arguably have the best goaltending.
But to me, it was it looked better than it did 6 months ago. I mean, 6 months ago, I was like, wow, that defense, that goaltending is stacked. Now,
yeah, not as much.
I mean, what's Quick good? I love Jonathan Quick, but what's he going to be?
I think that's Ryan Miller's job, by the way.
And has he been that good that I'm worried? You know, that was 4 years ago, the last Olympics. And Jimmy Howard isn't scaring me. So I just think this team hasn't necessarily come together as they had hoped.
We will find out in Sochi, Russia in about 6 weeks' time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll get a little bit more into the Bobby Ryan, Brian Burke saga. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is Mick Phillips, Toyota, Winnipeg Jets game day, and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past 6 a.m. Something I never thought I'd want to say again.
We were on 6 a.m. last year.
Yeah.
Quite a bit, right?
No, just once.
Were we?
Yeah.
When?
They played Boston again.
Yeah, maybe.
It was another, 1 o'clock Eastern start time, 12 noon Winnipeg. And then I think in a couple weeks, there's a couple 7 a.m. start times coming up.
I think anybody's, Really?
Yeah, because they play in 2 weeks from today. They play the Oilers at home at 1 o'clock.
You think anybody's up yet?
Yeah, we got some Twitter. Just people, you know, entering the Illegal Curve game winning goal contest, saying good morning to us.
Oh, nice.
There's one guy who's he must be a farmer. He says from his cows and himself, we have a few bovine listeners, which is good because we have a few bovine hosts on the show. So
yeah, and we eat a lot of cows.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You know how you know it's early out? When the snow clearing crews are out.
Oh, man.
All the snow clearing crews on the way here, they had to like move out of the way for me to get here. It was great.
Yeah. Because you were driving horizontally down the street.
Yeah. snow plows and caps. Those are the only people on the road.
Yeah. It made traffic a lot easier to get here.
That's true.
Unfortunately, it's bumpier and ice covered. It's like driving on Mars. It's cold as Mars. And it's like driving on Mars. Well, at least what I imagine. I've never actually done that. Anyways, back to Team USA for another few minutes here. And the debate that came out when after the stories written by Kevin Allen and Scott Burnside, you know, they both had access to all the meetings of Team USA. And my first question is, what's the advantage for Team USA to give that access?
Well, David Boyle said that he wasn't in favor of it, but he was sold on it that it would sell the game. My thought on that is, the only people reading this article are fans already.
That's
so
what I'm
why
saying.
Would it sell the game more? I don't understand it. If I'm David Poile, I say no, and I think he said no and probably got pressured into it. I just don't see, like, Team Canada apparently is coming out with some kind of episode or show about it. I assume that'll be heavily edited. But the idea is, like, I understand at the end of the day there's not some crazy trade secrets here and you're picking superstar teams. But at the same time, you want to have some form of confidentiality. And I personally think, and maybe it wasn't explicit, but I personally think that Burnside crossed the line here in terms of what he included. And I think he probably knew when he included it, it would cause a firestorm. In this day and age, with Twitter, with everything, you know the ramifications of what you're putting in there. This wasn't an article that he worked on. Clearly, he was writing these articles as he was going along, writing these pieces. So when he released it, I mean, that was a lot of time going into that. So it wasn't as if I was on deadline, press click, and said, hey, you know what, I'm not so sure about that. As far as I can tell, Kevin Allen didn't include the quote about Bobby Ryan. And to me, when you are provided with that quote-unquote unlimited access, there is a line that you ought not cross. And to me, Burnside crossed the line. Now, should he be, you know, absolutely vilified, similar to how Jason Bosch for what after the Joe Thornton thing? No, I don't think it was crossing the line necessarily like that. But I think he crossed the line. And I think, I don't blame USA Hockey as much as there was a trust there. And I don't think that he held up his end of the bargain. That's my personal opinion.
I disagree completely. And this might be the journalist at heart in me, but I think when you give a journalist unlimited access and you don't have, I guess the term would be editorial control, I think you can publish anything that adds to the story. And, you know, Richie, you mentioned that Burnside crossed the line. I don't think he's published anything inappropriate, as you mentioned, in the sense that Jason Botchford, there's certain swear words and conversations that happen kind of off the record. But Richie, all Burnside did here was report. That's what a reporter does, right? So when you start picking and choosing...
Yeah, but he was picking and choosing what he was reporting, which is fine, unless you want to put a transcript.
But it adds to the story.
What Brian Brick said. Well, yeah, but you also twist it the way you want to twist it.
But it's a quote. There's no twisting. It was a direct quote.
David Poile says, well, Bobby Ryan's on my final team. Poile says, Bobby Ryan is on Brian Burke's final team. Isn't that a necessary point to include if you're included in the process?
I don't have a problem with Burnside reporting what he reported. In fact, I think it's great. But I do agree with you in that second point, Richie, in that he should have been more clear, because based on, I mean, the conference call that David Poile held yesterday, based on the
that
conference...
That was just damage control.
I don't know that it was. I believe
thought he was very honest.
I believe that Brian Burke...
I'm not saying he's not honest. I think it was just he needed to do that because of the firestorm.
I'm sure he was going to do that regardless. But I think that Brian... I think it is contextually relevant that Brian Burke was also Bobby Ryan's greatest advocate and greatest supporter in the room. When you just cherry-pick that little quote...
This is a problem.
And I agree with you in that... I don't have a problem. I think the best story is written if he includes both of the things, including that, you know, Brian Burke was his greatest fan in the room.
Exactly.
And secondly, that he, at the same time, he was very public or very honest about what his shortcomings are as a player. Now, I mean, I think if you describe Bobby Ryan, I don't think it's you're telling secrets that he's not the most intense player on the ice all the time.
Fair enough. But also, I mean, I just don't think, Drew, when you're in these conversations, when Brian Burke's getting ripped for this, I think
I don't think that that's right.
And Brian Brooks is giving you his opinion. I mean, if you're in there and your team is, he's giving you his honest opinion of the player.
Well, if he doesn't give you the honest opinion, he's not doing the job for the Team USA that they hired him to do.
I just think that's not in the purview of this reporting here. I'm sorry. I just don't think. And maybe there isn't that editorial control explicitly, as there is in 24/7. But to me, it's implied. And I just disagree. I just point to the fact that Allen didn't include it, as far as I can tell. I read his article over again. He didn't include it. He's head of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. And maybe there's a different level there, because he heard the same thing, as far as I know, that Burnside heard. And he didn't find it. He didn't find that it was appropriate to include. I think that is relevant.
Yeah, but they're not going to write the same article.
Well, they basically did.
What do you mean? No, they didn't.
The points, they basically talked about the same battles for positions as he. It's a matter of Burnside's was longer, because he was on ESPN.com.
One included the quote, one didn't.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is, they talked about the battles for positions, the same battles. And
right.
Allen was obviously limited. I was in the States, so the USA Today had the print. Obviously, ESPN.com is online, so there's more room. Now, there could be different version online. I haven't compared the copies. But the idea to me is, they heard the same conversations. One chose to include it, one didn't. I don't know if Kevin Allen's been on a show, but I'd be interested to hear what he had to say about that.
Again,
I'm sure he'd stick up for Burnside in respect of
the journalist brethren.
That's right. But I just thought it was over the line.
To me, the best article, I have no problem with what Scott reported.
If you report that, to me, you should go and to David Poile and say, you okay with me including this?
The way it works in the real world, though.
Well, it's not the way it works in letting you into a discussion of GMs picking a team. I mean, they're giving you access that you wouldn't get, that you're not really ever going to be entitled to. They're giving you that extra over and above to promote the game. I think it's on you to know the boundaries, or at least ask if you're not sure. I wouldn't say throw the whole article by him, but I bet you Burnside was aware that this would cause issues. You don't think when he's writing this article that they don't think? I mean, ESPN. I've written stuff on ESPN. I mean, they're gonna edit. They're gonna do certain things, and they're gonna pick quotes. And you got to know that that's gonna be a huge quote. I'm sorry.
I don't think that there's anything wrong with creating opinions and creating controversy in that sense. I don't think that there's anything wrong with
but
that.
But as you,
it's
would
a
you,
fundamental,
would you say? I mean, would you say that Burnside is doing the readers a short service by not at the same including that quote, but then not including that Brian Burke was Bobby Ryan's biggest advocate in the room? Aren't those two things related to some degree?
Yep.
So I think in that sense, he is probably.
To be honest, if there's other critical quotes of other players, which there 100% was, but there weren't Brian Burke, who has a name that causes controversy, was that included? No, because he knows what causes controversy.
It's a fair point. I mean, I think that the best article there is written with
the article's great. Don't get me wrong. It was an amazing article. It was very insightful. I don't know why the hell USA Today would ever allow them in the
room. Not USA Today. USA Hockey.
I wish there was more stuff
would
like
ever
this.
Allow them in the room.
But
I would never allow them in the room.
It's transparency.
Crazy.
You're getting a different angle.
Transparency.
What's the advantage for USA Hockey doing it?
Sorry, not transparency. I meant...
Well, it is transparency.
It's
you get to see behind the curtain.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let them anywhere near... Any team of
I like to get a different perspective on. I like to see what's going on in the room.
Oh.
I like 24/7 for the simple fact that you're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
Except you're getting a sanitized view, because the teams obviously have final editorial control.
In this case, they didn't.
Which to me is, I mean, it's a good question as to why they were allowed in the first place. What's the net benefit for USA Hockey? And then secondly, to not insist on editorial control is certainly, in my view, an oversight by somebody in the management
team at
USA Hockey.
And what about this perspective? Let's take a broad look at this, and a more macro level.
Okay.
Will they ever be allowed in again?
Absolutely not.
So.
And there's a reason why there's. You imagine if this article was written for Team Canada?
No.
I mean, we're
not allowing anybody in the room to write an article like this, as far as I know. I mean, the video is different when they do their picking of the, because they can edit all that stuff and make it look fine. But that's, to me, the bigger issue. If this is to sell the game, I'm not putting this all on Burnside, but if this is to sell the game, and you ideally would want to have this every 4 years, you've ruined it a bit, I think.
I don't blame him. I blame USA Hockey for not putting parameters around
it. Fair enough, Drew. But again, I just think that should have been something that was omitted or at least checked with USA Hockey. I think when you're granted, maybe I view it differently than Ezzie, and I see Ezzie's perspective, don't get me wrong, but when you're granted that kind of access, that is not afforded to most, and wasn't afforded to most journalists.
You would say you're better off treading lightly than stomping all over it?
Good Breaking Bad reference.
And ESPN, I mean, I find it odd that they gave ESPN the access, just because of how little ESPN talks about the game.
Well, you were in the States for a week. Did you see any hockey?
I mean, ESPN, I watched ESPN a lot, because you do in the States, and I watch NHL Network actually for the highlights. ESPN, I saw one Kyle Turris highlight. Aside from the Winter Classic, I did not see, in the rotation of the hour-long sports centers, I did not see one game highlight. So I find it odd. I know it's the biggest provider in terms of, you know, the hits and the content that they're going to get on ESPN are significant, and USA Today is the biggest national publication. I just found that odd as well. Interesting to me that it wouldn't be, you know, their partner, NBC. Interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be done with the capitalists to the south of us, and we're going to focus for the next hour on Team Canada. It's time to start breaking down what we think the Team Canada roster will look like. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
On Tuesday morning in Toronto, Team Canada will be unveiled. You can hear that announcement live on TSN 1290. Coverage gets underway, I believe, at 10 a.m. here on this station. So just stay tuned to the big show and then follow right through with that for the Team Canada announcement. I'm sure it'll be, I think it's happening at the Leafs practice facility. I don't really know why they announce it. Yeah, anyways, forget it. I'm not even going to go into that. It's just the most boring way to announce it, possibly, in my opinion.
Yeah, remember back in 98, they had the kids walk? Or was that 2002? They had the kids walk out?
Yeah, like it was after a
Hockey in Canada game or something.
Something like that. There was, it was something a little bit more exciting as opposed to being in an empty rink. But whatever, that's another story for another day and time. Anyways, the roster announcement is Tuesday, and Team Canada is going to...
You remember, by the way, 2002, they had to name 8 guys like a year before the tournament.
Really?
Yeah.
Could they replace those guys?
Yeah, eventually they could have if they wanted to, but they have to name 8 guys before.
Well, I'm glad the IIHF changed that rule, because that doesn't make any sense. Anyways, the 20...
Those are promotional purposes.
Oh, the 25-man roster will get named on Tuesday. Everyone's expecting it's going to be 14 forwards, 8 defensemen, and 3 goaltenders. Mm-hmm. Also worth noting that for the games themselves, it's a bigger roster. You have to name a 22-man roster for each game. Mm-hmm. Most people assuming there'll be an extra forward, a 13th forward, and a 7th defenseman. Although, you know, the teams can certainly dress 14 forwards and 60 and 2 goalies if they wanted to go that way.
That could be possible. You likely, on the stacked teams, you likely won't see that.
No, you'll probably see the 13, 7, and 2 for most games, and the roster on Tuesday will be 14, 8, and 3. You know, we start on the forwards, and, you know, there's a couple guys, obviously, who are just your no-doubt shoo-ins. And I think, to me, it's Crosby and it's Taves up front that are your no-doubters. And, you know, is Stamkos a no-doubter with his injury right now?
No, I have him on my team. Not with his injury. He's not a no-doubter.
So the two no-doubters, in your opinion, are Crosby and Taves. Ezzy, would you agree with that as well?
Yeah, you could argue there's a few more, I guess, right?
Well, I mean...
Tavares. Duncan Keith. Drew Doughty.
Just forwards right now.
Okay. Forwards, I would say those two. Well, for me, I have a lot more.
Oh, obviously.
I don't even think Ezzy... I think Tavares on the team. I don't think Tavares even is a no-doubter. Only because of the depth at center.
That's true. I actually have him playing left wing on my team.
I have him playing left wing, too.
Yep.
But the idea is, like, I don't think there's no doubt. I think you're right.
Drew, to me, Getzlaff and Perry are no-doubters, but...
But to some, they might not be.
Right.
Well, think about 3 months ago, 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. You were probably a little bit more iffy on Getzlaff and Perry.
For sure I was, and I like...
Not me.
If you know me, like, I'm Ryan Getzlaff's biggest fan. But, you know, I wasn't so sure. Big ice issues and Perry's struggles last year.
No concerns for me. Yeah. That's just my opinion. I'm that high on those guys.
Well, I mean, you know, we're nitpicking, obviously, when we're trying to find problems with some of these players. But, you know, we've discussed this before. But it seems like there's, you know, let's get into it. You know, the fringe guys. The fringe guys. The Kunitzes and the Sharps.
You know, is Patrick Sharp now ahead of Chris Kunitz in your books for this team?
Oh, I think it's different in that right left wing, Drew. And I think I have Patrick Sharp on my team, and I don't have Chris Kunitz on my team. Chris Kunitz as a left winger goes up against too many other left wingers and centers to me. Centers who shoot left and ought to play the left side, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, I realize he can play well with Crosby, and I realize some believe, and probably rightfully so, that Crosby can be difficult to play with to an extent. But I don't think that he makes, at least he doesn't make my team, because of just simply that fact. I think there are other players who are, you know, a guy like Tavares, who are more talented, who can play, who I think can play the left side, at least, you know, it's easier to switch from center to left and right as opposed to left or right to center. As you saw with the USA selection process, they wanted that fifth center regardless of production, really, because Stepan's had a tough year. Sharp, he first of all can play center and right wing, but he also is right wing. And Team Canada is not as deep to me in right wing as they are in left wing. And I think Sharp's also ability to play with, and I realize, you know, Sharp's ability to play with Taves is a bonus. I think Kunitz's ability to play with Crosby is a deal breaker. You know, I mean, that's the main thing, I think. And don't get me wrong, he's a good player, but Sharp is a better player. And Sharp on his own is a better player to me than Kunitz. So if Sharp moves with somebody else on the roster, he can be more productive. At least I think it's more, they can predict his production a little bit more, more so than Kunitz's production with, say, Taves.
You're saying if Kunitz and Crosby, for whatever reason, aren't meshing or they need to switch that up, you think that by keep putting Kunitz on that team, you're almost, you're not wasting a spot because he's obviously too good for that.
Yeah.
But you don't have the confidence in Patrick Sharp to play with somebody other than Jonathan Taves, and you don't necessarily have the confidence of Chris Kunitz to play as well with somebody other than Sidney Crosby.
That's right.
Unlike last segment, I should say, I agree with everything Richie just said. I posted my roster yesterday on a legal curve, and at 9 o'clock at night, I took Kunitz out and I put Couture in for that exact reason.
Is that allowed?
Wow. I had to, guys. I think that Chris Kunitz, if you look at who will be selected for this team, and I don't think Chris Kunitz makes this team. And by the way, I think we should mention that we're picking this team partly on who we would put on the team, but also who we think Team Canada will put on this team. I think there is a difference, because I looked at my August team, and I had James Neal on there. I had Chris Letang on there. And I took them off.
I still have James Neal on my team, and I don't understand why he's not getting any attention. And he's not going to be on the team. If on Tuesday he's on...
I wouldn't say that there's...
I'd be shocked if he's on the team on Tuesday.
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, Drew, look at the guys. No, be confident with that pick. If you look at how many goals James Neal has scored over the last 3 or 4 years, he's up there. So, I mean, based on that alone, and Richie mentioned during the first segment, Rick Nash isn't on this team. He's not on my team either, because I just think of the injury problems, and he hasn't produced at the old level that we're used to. But it's funny, Richie, that you mentioned the left side and you think it's stronger. I actually originally thought the left wing, because we've talked about it. Talked about this, sorry. I have 5 centers on this team playing wing spots. And that includes, we'll go over our entire roster. But you're talking, you know, we mentioned Tavares. So I'm going to have Mike Richards playing a wing spot. I'm going to have Stamkos playing a wing spot. I'm going to have Eric Staal. He's still on my team. Mm-hmm. Couture. So Duchesne. So you look at all of these guys, and I started to look.
It's a team of centermen.
I started looking at the left side, and then when I picked Kunitz, then I started looking at it, and I go, it's actually the right side that's weak, because I have Jamie Benn on my team. And I think Jamie Benn, you put him, he's probably an extra forward because he wasn't invited to the orientation.
See, I have him as a regular forward.
Oh, and that's why I have
him as a top 9 forward.
And that's why I have
he could play top 9 forward.
And that's why I have James Neal on my team, is because he, I mean, you know, slots right in there on the right wing. You know,
I know, and he's an off-wing player, and he's got a good shot, and he can score, and he can go to the air, dirty areas and get his points. Drew, on the right side, I mean, I could certainly see an argument for him.
Well, to Richie's point, my only natural right wingers on this team are Marty St. Louis and Corey Perry.
Yeah.
I've got Eric Staal, and if you remember, Richie, Eric Staal played right wing in 2010.
Well, I mean,
he played both wing spots, but actually, he didn't play center.
He started with Staal and Ginla on the left side, and I think he moved over.
I've got Eric Staal playing right wing, and I have Logan Couture playing right wing. He's a natural center.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have Couture playing left wing.
And I have Couture on right wing as well. And
really? I don't like that.
Well, okay,
play
expand
center,
on that.
Play center.
Okay.
I mean, natural center, play left wing. Play both. Right wing, It's different to play on your off wing if you're not comfortable. I mean, St. Louis has been doing it for years and years and years. It's difficult to play on your off wing if you're not comfortable with it. And people think, oh, you know, what do you mean? Well, you go in on a 2-on-1, your angles are changed. Your ability to protect the puck has changed. You know, your one-timer ability is greater, but your passing ability is not as good, really, in many cases. And picking the puck off the boards and the defenses. I mean, you think of these things, oh, these are not big. These are big deals.
Well, Duchesne, in my team, and I don't, obviously, isn't what Team Canada is going to use, hopefully.
God willing.
Yeah, God willing. I mean, you know, I was going back and forth. It seems like you either have Couture or you have Duchesne, and one of them is going to have to play their off wing.
No, I don't have either of them on their off wing.
Do you have both of them on the left side?
I don't have Duchesne on the team.
You don't have Duchesne on the team?
Yeah, I know. It's a tough one for me.
Okay, so that's a whole separate issue altogether.
He's an extra forward for me.
Yeah, I mean,
he's one of those guys that he's getting included on the team because of his offensive abilities alone, as opposed to
skating
a Patrick Sharp or a Mike Richards, or Jonathan Taves, but he's a lock, or Bergeron. I think I was talking to Richie about this yesterday because I spent a lot of time on this, guys. And if we thought that there was a lot of big omissions for Team USA, there's going to be 10 big omissions. What happens?
I have Duchesne playing on the left side of Sidney Crosby. I think that's a match there. I think that I just like what the two of them would bring
to
each other.
I don't like it because they both carry the puck too much. I don't think it works. Now, I have St. Louis playing with Crosby, and they both like to carry the puck too, but I think they can play a little bit more off each other.
Are we going over our lines here?
No, we're going to do that at 7:45. But we're just talking about it because we'll circle back to it a little bit later on.
Richie makes a good point though. There's so many factors that come into this, and Richie again is right. It's not easy to all of a sudden in a one-off tournament where you really don't have the luxury, Richie, of 10 practices. Do they even get a practice?
They have 3 days before
they get one or two practices, maybe, right?
Nothing.
So. If you have, and again, you know, I'd have to agree with the Logan Couture argument because I put these lines out there, and I think the only positions that I'm really confident in that there's a good chance that these actually are the lines are at center. I think Crosby, Getzlaff, Taves, Bergeron are your centers. Maybe you can make the argument Tavares is center instead of Getzlaff, but I think we'd all agree Crosby, Taves, and Bergeron.
I don't have Bergeron on my team.
See, I do.
Whoa, we're getting racy now, Drew.
Couture, the one thing about Couture also has you to point out, Couture can shoot.
And I don't think absolutely.
That, you know, some of these guys are puck handlers, they got good shots, but Couture can really shoot the puck, and that's important.
Yeah, and that's why I've been on the team as well.
Let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll do some more on the Team Canada forward group, and then, of course, the defense and the goaltender still to come at the end of the first hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is McPhillips Toyota Game Day here on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com. Talking about Team Canada, previewing our rosters before the big announcement Tuesday. You can hear it live on TSN 1290 beginning at 10 a.m. on Tuesday. Continuing our talk about the forwards still to come, defense and goaltenders, of course. Richie, when we were talking about Team USA about 25 minutes ago, you mentioned you didn't like that they left Jack Johnson off the team because of the loyalty factor.
Yeah.
Now,
well, based on also the options that they had.
Sure. He's also a really good defenseman.
Yeah. Okay.
Doesn't think the game as well as you'd want him to, but yeah, you know.
Now, let me ask you guys around this table. Do either of you have Rick Nash on your team?
No.
I got to be honest with you. I didn't have Rick Nash on my team in August. I want to, you know, plug my picks, by the way.
Are you going to change him again?
Why wouldn't you be honest with us, by the way?
In August, I picked my Team USA 21 of 25. Not bad.
It's not bad.
That's not bad.
Yeah, okay. It's not bad. There are some surprises.
80,
that's not bad.
80, is that 84%? 84%.
84? Yeah. 21 times
so
4. 84.
That's not bad.
Ooh.
So, but I should...
If only you got that high of a grade in school.
I should also mention that my Canada team... From August, I'll be surprised if I bet I'll be around 15 of 17. I took off 5 players for my August team for this team.
15 of 17, but why 17?
Sorry?
Why only 17?
Well, I just think that, like, I'm just saying, like, I was 21 of 25, right?
Yeah.
So I think I'll be, like, around 17 of 25 on the August roster.
Oh, out of 25.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the roster that I pick now, I'll probably be 20 of 25, but that's a week before the selections. Sure. You know, we were talking about Bobby Ryan. A player for me, which was probably the most difficult to leave off, is Joe Thornton.
No.
Absolutely, Richie. Even though he's a little bit older.
Richie, you're not a Joe Thornton guy.
Hold on, hold on.
Nice guy, but no,
it's not about the nice guy.
Better not be on that team.
Not about the nice guy. He's one of the best puck distributors in the NHL, and he's an assist. What do you mean?
I agree he's one of the best puck distributors, but what's he ever done when it matters? I'm sorry.
Okay,
like,
well, that's a
2010 Olympics wasn't very good.
He wasn't good.
2006 World Cup, blah. Playoffs every year. All right. You know, those teams should have been able to take over the hump. He should be able to take one of those teams over the hump, and he hasn't. And I respect what he's done.
Was it 0-2 when he was it 0-2 where he, I think, took the opening faceoff? I don't think he got on the ice almost the rest of the game.
No, he didn't play in 0-2.
He was really young back then, too.
He was a controversial omission.
He was 22?
Yeah, he was a controversial omission because he was, I think, leading the league in assists. And don't get me wrong, the guy is a great passer. But skating is an issue, big ice, and the other centers ahead of him are an issue. And to me, I mean, his production in past significant tournaments and playoffs have not. Does not. I mean, I know he's had some good playoffs, but to me, it doesn't.
I don't
make the
disagree
team.
With you on that, but I think that as an individual player, he can be dominant, and he has been dominant at times with the San Jose Sharks. No, not at times. Most of the year, playing on a very good line, and San Jose has a lot of good centers. The reason you just touched on it, Richie, the reason why I kept Jumbo Joe off of my list is because I have Ryan Getzlaff playing that second-line center role behind Crosby. He's big, tough. He's a good passer, can score.
Great passer.
And I don't think Joe Thornton can play a wing spot.
I agree with that, too.
Joe Thornton's not a guy that you can...
No, I agree.
Okay, look at the guys, Richie, that we both agree on already, and I know we're going to go through it, but Sharp, Couture, these guys you can put on the left or right side. I know there's issues here. Stahl, I think they're more versatile. But Thornton, to me, still, I had trouble taking him off the roster just because of how dominant he can be at times.
Then let's go back to my question at the beginning. Why isn't Rick Nash on either of your teams?
Rick Nash, and we talked about Crosby, but Rick Nash is difficult to play with, first off. I mean, his production hasn't been great, and he's a goal scorer. This team can score. Rick Nash is a scorer who likes to hold on to the puck. Not like Stamkos, who kind of, you know, can distribute, can shoot it quickly and get in the open spots.
Sure.
He likes to hold the puck and go down the ice. And while his passing, you know, it's not bad. He can certainly create. He's not the easiest guy to play against. And his big body style, his skating, he's not the fastest skater. He moves well for a big guy, and he's improved upon that over time. He's not the fastest skater. I don't think his game is that conducive to the big ice. I don't think I'm not saying he wouldn't be an effective player, but I just don't think the right side, to me, he's a fit there. He was in the discussion. He certainly under consideration for my team, you know, when we were putting this together. But I just don't think, I don't think he's been that great recently, guys. And, you know, who's the guy you're going to put him with? I don't know. I just don't see, I don't have a spot for him.
Rick Nash is one of my favorite players in the league. When he came into the league, he was incredible. He's got 40 goal seasons under his belt, but he's lost a step, guys. He's had injuries, and he's lost a step.
Mm-hmm.
And if any of us were to say that Rick Nash has been the player that the Rangers thought they were getting, I mean, we'd be really lying to ourselves. He really hasn't produced. Rick Nash was acquired by the Rangers, Richie, to really put them over the top, and he hasn't done that. And again, you know, that's just the way it works out. That's not a shot at him personally. I just don't think Rick Nash is in the elite category anymore. I think Nash is still a good player. I mean, it's not like he only has 1 year left in the NHL. He has a few years, 5-6 years of good hockey probably, maybe even more left in him.
More than that,
but I just don't think he's at that elite level anymore, and it's tough to keep him off the team when, as we talked about before, Richie, really the weakness of this team is on the right wing. But I have two centers playing the right wing spot, so that kind of makes up for it. But Rick Nash, you know, Richie mentioned his game isn't conducive to the international ice. He can fly, but he just can't fly like he used to. He just doesn't have the legs that he used to have when he was younger. And so I think you're putting him on the team, and what role is he going to play? Again, I have Corey Perry playing my second line right wing.
He's not a great skater either, but he's different in the way he plays. And the way he just goes to the net.
He's a sniper.
Yeah, he's a sniper, right, guys? And he goes to the net. He's a little bit more rugged.
Will he do the dirty work?
That's what I like about putting him on that second line.
And Perry will go to the net, and he can work off the cycle. And I realize in the bigger ice, it's a little bit different in a game. But he can also play with Getzlaff. They have good chemistry together, but they're both talented players. And Perry, to me, is a goal scorer, but I mean, he... The thing about Perry, and if you think about it in terms of Nash and Getzlaf, for example, playing together, Perry and Getzlaf, Perry doesn't need the puck as much as Nash to be effective. You have to understand, when you're putting a team together, there's only so many guys, there's only one puck. And so many of these guys are used to always having the puck on their sticks. You can't have 12 guys who always have the puck on their stick, because the guys who don't have the puck on their stick with them don't know what the hell to do. And because they're not comfortable. They don't really, a guy, for example, like Corey Perry, a guy like Jamie Benn, who can play with the puck on his stick but also without it on his stick, they can go to the spots they need to go to to score. They don't need the puck to be effective all the time. You can't have 12 guys who need the puck to be effective.
And that's why they're quintessential wingers. And they're guys that you have to have pure wingers on this team, knowing that you're... The problem with this team, and it's not a bad problem, you've got just so many good centers that you can't keep off the team. Like, how do you keep... Matt Duchene, how do you keep Logan Couture off the team? How do you keep Eric Staal off the team?
Generally, centers are more puck distributors. And what do puck distributors do, for the most part?
They carry the puck.
That's right.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to focus on the defense still to come, the goaltenders, and then at 7:45, after our interview with Kevin McGran, we unveil each of our teams for Team Canada. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. McPhillips Toyota Game Day on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290. Still to come. In 30 minutes' time, Kevin McGran joins us to talk about the World Juniors. He's live in Malmo, Sweden. And then at the top of the next hour, Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network, is going to join us to talk about the Bruins-Jets game, which gets underway at 12 noon on this fine radio station, on television, on TSN Jets. Hustler and Lawless follow us. And then Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour at 11 a.m. this morning.
Guys, I feel like I'm taking like linear algebra in university again. Like, this is the hardest thing I've ever done, picking this team. Like, linear algebra was hard for me. So, but no, I mean,
Did your dad teach linear algebra?
Yeah.
He did. The hardest thing you've ever done, eh?
I think the term is the apple fell far from the tree.
Yeah, that's right.
So, no, but picking this team is just... Again, like last night, I was up at night thinking, like, how do I not include Chris Kunitz? How do I not include Joe Thornton?
You're not actually picking, like, you need to call them and tell them they're on the team. Like,
no, but it's funny.
actually, they get calls from Ezzy. That was a great story about how USA Today, I guess who'd they text? Kessler? And they had an old cell phone number for him, and it was some 67-year-old guy in Vancouver.
I heard about that.
Yeah. And he's like, I'll play for you guys, but I'm pretty sure that you don't want me.
That's great.
That was a funny story.
That's funny.
Yeah. Okay, moving to the defense before we get back to our final predictions.
By the way, just quickly, is there any doubt that Crosby's the captain?
No. I mean, Taves is the only other guy. Either one, you can't be wrong.
I think if you give it to Taves, you're creating a controversy. You just gave it to Crosby.
Yeah, I agree.
Defense. Now, the defense was interesting in that the top five of this defense, I think, was pretty clear cut. I think everybody, I mean, you guys can tell me, Keith and Doughty, Bomeister and Peter Angelo.
Well, Bomeister before the year, I don't think, was as guaranteed as he is now, but yeah.
When we picked our teams back in August, Richie had Bomeister on his team and I didn't, and now I've put Bomeister on the team. I don't think you can exclude him. He's such a good skater for that international ice. He's played for Canada before, and him and Petrangelo, I think you pencil in as a pair there.
That's right. You just close your eyes and put him there, and you don't have to worry about it.
Great skater. Great on retrieving the puck in if you're forechecking. Great. You can join the rush. He can play minutes and not wear down. He generally doesn't. He never gets injured. He has a chemistry with Petrangelo. I mean, there's so much to like about Maestro's game. He doesn't need to be the offensive force that maybe people wanted him to be years and years ago, but let me tell you something.
You have enough guys on the team that can
need
do
to
that.
Get the puck up to the guys you need to. He's not going to play in the power play.
No.
I like him on this team. I think he solidified a left side that to me had many question marks coming into the season.
Right. So your right side of your defense, I mean, in whatever order, this is in no particular order, Doughty, Petrangelo, and Weber, right?
Yeah.
Just no questions asked.
No questions asked. There's no questions asked.
Yeah, to me as well. Ezzy, do you have any quibbles with that comment? Then the left side, you have Keith and Bomeister as your 1-2.
Yes.
And then, to me, it's the final three spots on this defense.
I agree.
That are the ones that I've gone back and forth when I put it, you know, pen to paper to try and figure this out.
Very tough. Very tough.
Exactly. Because, and any way I cut it, I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself there.
Well, first thing, I think that Subban is on my team in one of those three spots, 100%. Now, whether he's on the right, playing the wrong side, and who's playing, Weber can't play the wrong side. Weber cannot play the left side.
Well, if they had somebody to play the left side, you know, if they could move one of the right side guys over to the left side, this would be a lot easier of a decision because there's a glut of guys who are on the right side,
right.
Not as much as on the left side.
Maybe even more coming into the year. The point is, like, Pietrangelo and Bomeister, you're going to play as left-right. Bomeister left, Pietrangelo right. You're not going to split them up,
no.
Likely, and they are comfortable there. Doughty is a right side guy. Keith's a left side guy. You're going to play them together, and you don't have enough left side guys. So you're not going to ask Keith to move over. So the next point is Weber. Weber is a right side guy. But Weber, as you could see when Seth Jones is playing with him, he cannot play. He doesn't want to play. He's not comfortable on the left side. You sure as hell are not going to throw Weber in the left side in the Olympic Games and with the big ice and different surroundings. So,
no,
Weber is your right side guy. So the question is, who can play third pairing if Weber's a third pairing? We can discuss that later. It really isn't. Who can play on the left side, likely with Shea Weber or with Drew Doughty? One of the two.
And
to me, Subban is one of the three,
yep.
But can Subban play the other side? Subban's power, now he can dress as a seventh defenseman because of the roster rules,
sure.
And he can be your power play guy, play a bit, and they can work in seven guys. That's fine. To me, Weber's got a great shot. Subban is the best one-timer in the National Hockey League. He moves the puck, he can skate. He's got to be on the team.
Let me ask you guys this. There's a lot of talk.
If Subban's not on this team, it's a huge mistake.
Did
you see what he did the other night with Montreal?
Oh,
two goals and an assist. I mean,
well, the pass he can make from his own zone too. He can hit the guy in the breakaway.
You can't put the best defenseman, the Norris winner. You can't not put him on the team.
Well, I mean, I was trying to think of ways to not include him just to be the devil's advocate, and I couldn't.
Yeah, no.
Like there's certain things I just
there were seven spots you might be able to. You cannot with eight spots not put him on the
PK
team.
PK Subban doesn't have any weaknesses to his game.
Well, let me ask you guys this. There's a lot of talk about Mark Edward Vlasic, and he's out in San Jose, and a lot of people probably don't get to see him very often.
I know.
Very solid defenseman.
Talk about his game. What is he bringing? Is he on your teams? I mean, a lot of people are talking about him like he's a shoo-in.
Nope.
Because he's because he can play the left side and not have to worry about it.
His game, he's a bigger guy. He can skate. He's not the most physical guy, but he can engage. He can move the puck out of his own zone. They expect him to be a 40-point defenseman, I think, when they draft him. He can create offense, but he's not great. He's not going to dominate offensively. Not that they necessarily need him to. He's been on my team, off my team, on my team, off my team. A guy I think needs to be considered is Brian Campbell. And I had him on my team way back when. You're going to say, oh, Brian Campbell, smaller guy, sometimes has problems defending. Sure.
Can skate the puck out of trouble.
Can skate the puck through the neutral zone probably as well as any defenseman in the National Hockey League. And there's one thing to consider when you're talking about Vlasic and Campbell. And Campbell played in San Jose, so you can look at it this way. If Vlasic's on Florida, playing in his own zone for 40 minutes a game, and Campbell's in San Jose playing in the offensive zone for 40 minutes a game, what would your perspectives be of the player?
That's a good point. I have Brent Seabrook on my team, and I had Brent Seabrook on my team back in August. And, you know, Richie, you mentioned Mark Edward Vlasic and how he's been on and off your roster. To me, Seabrook is a guy that it's obvious that he can play with Duncan Keith.
Do you have Seabrook switching sides?
To me, he is a guy that probably could do that, but for me, he's an extra. But to me right now, when I wrote out my pairings, there's a problem. I have to be honest, and Richie, again, is correct, and I agree with him. To me, you're going to have to put Keith and Doughty together. And to me, Shea Weber's got to be your number one on your number one pairing, or at the very least, number two. I have Bomeister.
They're all number one pairings.
On this team, I mean,
yeah.
I have Bomeister and Pietrangelo as my third pairing.
Sure.
And those guys you'll put them on the penalty killing unit. Richie mentioned they won't be on the power play unit, but then you have so many guys like Doughty, Weber, and Keith, and Subban. Subban's on my first power play unit.
Yeah.
But I think you almost have to put Subban with Weber. Because I don't think Subban is an extra on this team. I think Subban plays a big role on this team, and Richie is right. Again, Shea Weber is, to me, aside from maybe Duncan Keith this year, one of the best defensemen in the NHL, all-around best defenseman. He's on an awful team this year, and he's still doing very well. But I think Bomeister and Pietrangelo, you put them as a pair together. Seabrook has the ability to play with Keith on that right side. And if you need to, you put him over on the left side in certain situations. I don't think he's one of the top. He's not in my top six. He's
Seabrook, this is a problem with Seabrook. Yeah, let me get in there. Seabrook plays the right side. Well, that's an issue, first off.
Yep.
Because there's so many.
They're strong on the right side.
Second issue is Seabrook skating on the big ice is an issue.
And he wasn't great Seabrook in Vancouver.
Yeah, he wasn't. He but you played his way out of the lineup. And I have a lot of respect for Brent Seabrook. He can do everything pretty well. And he can play on my team in the NHL any day of the week and on every other team. I don't think he fits this team. But I do realize that you say, okay, but he can play with Keith and there's a comfort level. Sure. But Keith and Doughty played really well together in the Olympics. I realize it was 4 years ago. Pronger, Niedermeyer, and I believe Boyle played the left side with Weber. I think those were the six, if I recall correctly. It's been a while now. But
Boyle is on my team.
And you're over 30 now, so your brain isn't what it once was.
Well, Richie, the question is, can Boyle play that role?
Boyle was good. Boyle had his issues in 2010
at times. See, the icebreaker for Boyle, I know everyone says, you know, Boyle's lost a step. Well, of course he's lost a step. He's
38 years old.
He's still on my team because of how good he is at moving the puck, his vision on the ice, and you put him on the power play. He plays a lot of power play minutes for the San Jose Sharks guys. He does a great job. We saw him here. That power play is deadly. And to me, I don't know, though, if Boyle can play top pair with Weber. That's the problem.
If you need to move one guy to their offside.
Subban.
No. Well, I mean, you're going to need to move more than, I mean, one guy to their offside. I mean, if you, let's say Vlasic is your left side defenseman there. So you need to, you got a top six of Keith and Doughty.
What about Finneff?
Well, I mean, who do you move over to the off wing? You know, Boyle or Campbell? Because they're,
Campbell's left side, plays left side.
Okay. That's why Richie's saying he would be a better fit.
Yeah,
but
that's why. And his skating ability.
To me, Richie Boyle's left side.
He's a right side. Do you want to play left side? I mean,
this team, he's got to play left side.
But you want
and Subban's got to play left side.
Well, so would you rather
Subban might have to play left side?
This is why it's so difficult, and it, you know, I'm pulling my hair out here trying to figure out how these guys fit in. But to me, these are my top pairings and my extras. I've got Subban with Weber, Keith and Doughty. As Richie mentioned, Keith and Doughty, that might be your top pair, actually. So you probably have Keith and Doughty, Subban and Weber. My third pairing is Bouwmeester and Pietrangelo. And then my extras are Seabrook and Boyle.
So you don't have any problem with Subban moving over the left side?
I think he has to be in the top six, and there's too many other, like, Weber, Doughty, and Pietrangelo have to play on the right side. Those are your best defensemen. Mm-hmm. Or, well, you don't want to move them. As Richie mentioned, Shea Weber it's not an option moving him over.
Yeah, he doesn't want to even play the Olympics.
You don't even ask him to move over because, I mean, what you would be doing is, you might make your left side a little bit stronger, but at what detriment to your right side or to Shea Weber is
his effectiveness.
Is good.
See, when I also, like I was showing Richie my team here, I've got a nice little Google Doc out here. I had Doughty and Weber, and then Keith and Subban, but the problem is Doughty's a right-handed shot. Again, another guy. Do you want him to be the guy that is playing on the left side? That's a huge
left side with Mitchell and Scudero. All these guys over the years, he plays the right side, guys. I mean, this is the way
that's a problem.
I mean, you want to talk? Pick the puck off the boards, getting the one timer off the half. Well, there's so many things. I realize that they set it up on the power play differently, but you pick the puck off the boards in your own zone on the right, on your right shooting defenseman. It's different when you're on the other side.
There's five guys on this team that, you know, are gonna. There's no reason to ask them to play the different sides or to confuse the situation at all or to make
so
it off.
Three, you mean?
Well, no. I mean, Keith and Bouwmeester on the left.
I mean, the other three.
Doughty, Pietrangelo, and Weber. Don't even bother to mess with those.
I agree.
Right.
And then the question comes in for the final three spots.
Subban.
Well, you know, are you asking, you know, is Vlasic on your team as a left side defenseman? Or are you asking Subban to switch sides and play the left side? Is Boyle on your team? I mean, where does Subban fit in if he is on your team? What about Brian Campbell? You mentioned Dion Phaneuf, Richard. I mean, you know, he's been sort of talked about a little bit in the shadows, but not really. I just don't see him cracking the roster, even though he can play on, you know, the side that he can play on.
I think Phaneuf deserves to be in the conversation, though. I mean, if you look at, he's been an excellent world junior. And Phaneuf, I think, maybe what hurts him a little bit is, you know, Richie mentioned Brian Campbell and how much we see him in Florida versus Dan Boyle and Vlasic. I think there's a good chance that Vlasic makes this team over Seabrook. I really do. I'm just a big Brent Seabrook fan. But I think the fact that they might want a different player, not that right side guy, just because he plays with Keith, right? So I think that this is an issue here. These are, I imagine, the conversations Iserman and all of his crew are having right now, because You have, as you mentioned, Drew, we could probably agree, I think we just did, that there's probably five guys on the defense that are going to play their natural sides. And then you have to have some other players in there that are going to play their unnatural side. I think PK Subban, I think, is versatile enough that you could put him with a Shea Weber, and he can play left side.
The Boyle thing also is, you look at the defense, it's still pretty young, guys. I mean, guys who have a ton of experience, but you know, Doughty, Pietrangelo, Weber, Bomeister's a little bit older now, and Keith. I mean, they're all guys who've played, you know, you're talking about cup winners and Keith and Doughty, and guys who won the Olympic gold, but it's also younger. So you look at Boyle and you say, you know, maybe they want that 38-year-old guy just to settle things down if there are any issues.
I put Boyle on the team, Richie, because I basically took Letang off my team, I put Boyle on the team.
Now, did you take Letang off because of injury or because of skill set?
I think Letang offensively is incredible. And as far as his skating ability and his ability to move the puck, it's incredible. But I don't think I'm not as confident in him being out there as I am in Dan Boyle. Dan Boyle's been there. He's more reliable defensively for me and offensively, both sides of the puck. That's why I have Boyle. I think Boyle overall is a better fit for this team than Letang is.
Are there any other defensemen that...
Giordano we haven't mentioned.
Well, Giordano.
Now, he's been out for, 6 weeks?
Yeah.
Or he's just coming back now? So I think that hurts him. I think it really does hurt him.
Did you think he had a viable shot at making this team before that?
I mean, left side guy who can skate and move the puck. I mean, it's somebody to talk about.
Well, Richie, there's a reason why he was invited to the camp.
Yeah.
Mark Mathot, you say, there's no reason Mark... All these guys... Remember when the Team Canada orientation roster came out, we said, how is this guy not on? How is that guy not on? Evander Kane, Jamie Benn. Well, it's because there's a lot of good players that were left off. So all of these players were on there for a reason. Giordano, Richie, I think, if you look at his numbers... I think he's only played about 15 games. I'd have to check that. But he's missed the last 6 weeks or so, just coming back from that foot injury. But I think Giordano, left-side guy, captain of the Flames, I don't think he's not necessarily completely off the radar. I just think the injury is completely, you know, altered the perceptions of his game leading up into the tournament.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the goaltenders, and then we unveil our teams in their entirety.
He's back, by the way. He's playing. Just so you guys know.
At 7:45 in the morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets game day live on TSN 12.9.
Interesting. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
My back.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. The Jets and the Bruins coming up at 12 noon on this fine station. Hustler and Lawless following us. And then Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour at 11 a.m. this morning. We continue our look at Team Canada, focusing our attention now on the goaltenders. And I believe that for the most part, this is probably going to cause the least amount of controversy and discussion associated with the team, because the top two seems pretty clear-cut in Roberto Luongo and Carey Price. Anybody have any quibbles with that statement?
No.
I don't think so. I think, you know, Richie... Drew, you mentioned the you know, the lack of controversy. I think there would be more controversy if some of these goalies were healthier. Braden Holtby hasn't played very well this year, and he's not even the number one goalie in Washington anymore. But I think when you're talking about Corey Crawford and Josh Harding, if they're healthy right now, Josh Harding is a Vezina candidate, and we've all agreed on this before. Best story in the NHL right now what he's dealing with the MS and how he's emerged as a career backup, and now he's taken the role. But now he's having health concerns, and I think that affects that. And I think if he wasn't having those health concerns, you could make a strong argument for Josh Harding. But again, you're talking about the top two, Carey Price, Roberto Luongo. I think Carey Price and Roberto Luongo, it's their number one job to win.
I've said Price for 2 years, so I'm not going to start changing now. I think Price is the best goalie. I think Luongo likely gets first shot, and I think Price probably takes over at some point. I mean, it's possible that he won't.
Well, the thing of that going for Luongo in that instance is, I mean, if you look at Canada's schedule, like we've said in the preliminary round, it's very soft.
I mean, it's almost by fortunate that they had struggling at the World Hockey Championships over the last couple of years, because that's what determines the rankings for the pools in the Olympics.
Right.
So I think Canada finished fourth or fifth or whatever it was at the World Hockey Championships, and it's, I don't know exactly how they create the formula, but whatever it is, it's allowed Canada to play in, I mean, I don't have the division right here, but I think they play Slovakia and maybe Slovenia, or, I mean, the first few games are almost buys for Canada.
It's interesting the way, I mean, look at the goalie's perspective from the offseason into now. And you look at the U.S., you're like, oh, the U.S. is deep. They have, they have Howard and Quick and Miller and Schneider, and now they have Bishop. And, oh, the U.S. is deep. Oh, look, Quick's injured. You know, Miller's been pretty solid, but Quick's injured. Howard, off and on. Schneider hasn't really played much, and Bishop's been great, but isn't really, established. And you think, okay, what about Team Canada? Oh, there's question marks in goal. I mean, look at Carey Price. He's had a terrific year. Mm-hmm. Luongo's been, solid, really solid, as he usually is. People like to rip him, but he's really solid. Fleury's had a nice year. So for all the talk about really not having, goalie being a huge weakness, it's been pretty solid this year.
Depth in goal, to me, is sort of a misnomer, as long as you have a solid one or one and two. Because, I mean, they only play one goalie on the ice at a time. It's not like you're talking defense where you're cycling through seven defensemen or whatever it is. You got the one guy. He goes in the net, and if he struggles, it's a good thing you have a backup in the But you look at every team in this tournament, and they at least all the medal contenders in this tournament, and they all have a very good 1-2 goaltending combination. I mean, Sweden's got Lundqvist and Backstrom, or whoever they decide to go with, and I mean, Russia's got
Backstrom's finished.
Sorry, Backstrom's finished, but it's Lundqvist and whoever their second goaltender.
Richie, let Drew finish.
Thank you. I don't even remember who Sweden's
second
goaltender.
Well, Finland with Rask and with Lettinen.
Exactly, and Russia's going to be fine. I mean, so depth in goal is, any of the medal contenders really have depth in goal. It's not a big, I don't think it's a difference maker.
On this team, Drew, you look at Price and Luongo, and I agree with Richie. I think Luongo gets the first start because he's the incumbent from Vancouver.
It's fair.
But I would argue that Price, at this point in his career, is a better goaltender.
Sure.
And I think that Carey Price, if he gets the second start, and again, you mentioned, Drew, that Canada, I'm not sure if they play Slovakia the first game, but they have some easier teams early. But there are no gimmies in this tournament. And when you have a situation where Roberto Luongo potentially loses that first game, you never know what can happen. And then Price plays well in the second game. I think Price can take over. But I really don't think there's a clear-cut number one goaltender right now. And I was going to say, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think whoever emerges as the better goaltender earlier on in the tournament will determine that. I think we'd all agree that the third goalie most likely won't be considered for a start unless there's an injury or something like that.
Well, both times Canada won the gold medal. In 2002, the starting goaltender initially was Curtis Joseph. And then they went to Brodeur, and Brodeur took him to the gold medal.
Yep.
And then in Vancouver, the starting goaltender was Brodeur, and it was Luongo who took him to the gold medal. So, I mean,
this isn't something new.
No, this isn't something new for Canada to start with one goalie and transition to another one in the course
Luongo
of the tournament.
And Luongo had to pinch it in the World Cup, if you recall, too, 2004.
Okay, I didn't recall that because I don't have the
memory.
Yeah,
Brodeur got injured, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The third goaltender. I mean, I have Mike Smith. I think both of you probably have Mike Smith as well.
Yeah.
Why does it seem like it's so clear-cut for Mike Smith?
He's a great goaltender.
Yeah, he's good. I don't love Mike Smith as a goalie. I think he's good. He's a big guy. He's mobile. He can play the puck, which is helpful. Certainly it's not determinative.
He has a goal this year.
It's helpful. Yeah. goal this year. But, he can't play the puck and that stuff. So can Carey Price, granted. Luongo's not great with playing the puck. But the idea is, he's putting his time with Team Canada, guys. And going to those World Championships is something that has value, and he can also play if they need him to. I don't think they'll need him to. I hope they don't need him to, frankly. Harding's had a great year. He's the best story. It's been a year. He hasn't, consistently done this. Smith has had great years. He's not having a great year this year, but he has had great years in the past. And, Fleury... Smith doesn't inspire the most confidence in me, I will say that, but Marc-Andre Fleury, good season or not, he's been so unpredictable in the playoffs, and you can't bring him over, I don't think.
Yeah, I went between Mark. The reason why I kept Mike Smith on the team is because I just can't take him off the team, and I think Josh Harding is definitely in the conversation. Corey Crawford has been a lot better dating back to last year and going into the playoffs, but he's got the injury problem, and Josh Harding is having some illness issues, which have kept him out of the Minnesota Wild lineup. The connection that I got to say that I didn't discover this. The connection I like for Mike Smith is
Sean Burke.
Sean Burke's got a very storied history with Team Canada playing internationally. Yes. I think he was actually like a traveling goalie with Team Canada at one point back when they had the national team.
Thank you, sure. Right about that.
Because he played in the Olympics in
88.
I was going to say, was it 88?
Yep. He played in the Olympics.
When he was between New Jersey and Hartford, didn't he have a year where he...
Yes.
Well, you were like 40, you remember
I was about 40 or 45. But there was a year where he held out or something.
88 he played.
There was something going on.
I think it's interesting that...
I thought it was Lillehammer almost.
Might have been. Mm. I think it was Ranford and Corey Hirsch, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
I think that can't be completely ignored here, though, guys. Sean Burke is the goalie coach for the Phoenix Coyotes, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. And the whole year, he's been preparing him not only for the NHL, but he's been talking to him about playing in the Olympics and how he's got more of a deeper style in the net. And Mike Smith, Richie mentioned his puck handling ability, and he's not as confident. I agree. Carey Price or Roberto Luongo's in a one-game situation. I'm more confident in those guys than Mike Smith. But I think Mike Smith, I'm not as...
88.
Yeah. 88.
Says the reliable website, Wikipedia. Yeah.
Great.
So Mike Smith, I think, deserves to be on that team just because I had him. Not only did I have him on the August team, because you know a couple years ago he was a Vezina contender, but he's fallen off a little bit. But I just have him on the team because I'm confident in him enough that, let's say Price goes down in Sochi and Luongo's the number one goalie, I'm confident that Smith can move into a backup role and possibly even start, I think... And I think there's too many injury issues with some of the other guys, Corey Crawford and Josh Harding. Richie mentioned Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury has been unbelievable for Pittsburgh this year.
But you can't trust him in the big game right now. He needs to establish himself.
Well, we saw what happened in the World Juniors a couple years ago as well.
Juniors, that was 10 years ago.
Well, still, it goes to show it's a track record of big game letdowns.
Moratorium on Fleury's World Junior performance.
He won the cup, though, after that save on Lidstrom, and he was great in the playoffs. Brooke played 92 as well, Drew. So.
Okay, there you go. So sort of close. Anyways, another guy, he's not going to make the team, but Jonathan Bernier's numbers this year have been terrific.
Yeah, he's a great goalie. And, you know, once he becomes a starter, you could talk about him for 2018.
And I don't even think the NHRs are going to South Korea in 2018. So I think this is,
I actually heard Dennis Rodman is picking the team. He's going to switch from North Korea to South Korea, and he's going to pick the team.
He's defecting out?
Yeah, he's going to defect out, and he's going to pick the team.
Okay. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we head out to Malmo, Sweden, and we're going to be joined by Kevin McGran to talk about the World Junior Hockey Championship semifinals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.